Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence. Good morning, Valley Grove. It is great to be with you this Sunday morning, April the 19th. I hope you've had a wonderful week. As you can tell, I'm outside today in the woods enjoying the fresh air and the wonderful weather we've had this past week, and I hope you've enjoyed it as well. Before we get started this morning, as we continue to venture on into the story of Ruth, I want to give you just a couple quick reminders or announcements, if you will, just to kind of keep you updated on what's going on in the life of the ministry here at Valley Grove. First, I hope you are watching our midweek videos. If you're not, the link will be down below in the video, below this video, I should say. I hope you will watch those as they kind of give you some extra content on the Book of Ruth and give you some things that we won't be quite able to work into the sermons each week. And so this past week's video on Wednesday was about the literary structure of the Book of Ruth. So there's an overall structure to the Book of Ruth, and so I hope you watch that video, because knowing that helps us understand the book a little bit better and the author's intent as he was writing. So anyway, if you didn't watch it, go back and watch it. This next week we're going to be talking about a crucial piece that will help us understand kind of more of the story, and that's the kinsman redeemer. And so we'll look at that on this upcoming Wednesday. So don't forget to check out the midweek videos. I'm trying to post when I'm going to show those. That way you have more time to interact and watch. And again, thank you so much for being so active already online as well. Another quick announcement. Hey, don't forget, I know in the midst of all this COVID-19 stuff and all the hoopla that's going around that, don't forget, Pastor Jacob and Miss Alyssa are still getting married on May the 9th. And so send them a message. You might need to pray for Jacob more, or maybe Alyssa, you know, in regards to Jacob. Just kidding. No, they're excited about getting married. I'm excited for them. And we're supposed to have a wedding shower for them, but due to all the corona stuff, we had to postpone that. So be looking for when we're going to have that for them. But yeah, just pray for them, encourage them, send them a message, send them a card. However, just remember them in the days ahead. Also, something really exciting, and some of you already know this, our church app, the Valley Grove app, is now fully on both platforms, Apple and Google Play on Android. And so I'd encourage you to download that so that you can stay more connected with what's going on. We'll have some notifications. We can push notifications through that. You can keep up with content that's going on. Also, all the previous videos from when we started doing virtual worship are now on YouTube as well. And so you can go look at those. And if you didn't get to catch one during the week, they'll be on YouTube as well. Continue to check our Facebook page, as that's where we'll update everything. And again, just thank you for being so active online and during this time as well. It could be a time for us to kind of, you know, go in a hole and stick our head in the sand and just kind of be isolated and remote. But many of you have continued to be active, engaging with each other, whether that be phone calls or text messages or on Facebook or other social media platforms. So thank you so much for being that. And then lastly, and I know this is going to be a big question that many of you have, will have in the days ahead, but let me kind of go ahead and lay out what ministry is going to look like as far as Sunday morning, at least, for the next few weeks. I know Governor Kemp came out this week with a plan to begin to reopen the reopen the state, and I know there's a lot of talk. Some people are for it, some people are against it, but the reality is, as staff, we met before he even made that decision, because ultimately it's up to us to do what's right for all of our church and for all of our members. And so we decided on Monday that we would continue doing virtual worship at least through May 17th. Now, the week leading up to May 17th, we'll kind of get back together as staff and reevaluate what that looks like. We may extend that out a couple more weeks and just wait till June, or maybe even further. It just depends on how things are then. But for the next three Sundays in May, we will be meeting virtually online So let me encourage you to continue to join us and be a part of the conversation of what's going on through the sermons, through the midweek videos, or through whatever we're doing as a church. So again, May 17th, that's kind of our target right now. Again, that may need to be pushed out. It may not. We'll just have to wait and see. So be prepared to hear about that more in the future. And lastly, as tough as this decision has been for some of our children's ministry leaders, it's just one that we think's best. And we've decided to postpone VBS this year. In the interest of our children and our workers and everybody involved, it just seemed like the best thing to do right now. I'm not sure what we'll do. I heard Miss April and Miss Holly were talking about potentially doing a back-to-school event sometime in the fall to kind of kick off the school year and to kick off our semester of jam for kids. And so we'll revisit that, and they're going to talk about that more in the days ahead in the summer. And so when that decision is final, obviously we'll let you know. But as of right now, we will not be having VBS this summer. And I know that's heartbreaking. I love VBS. It is some of my fondest memories as a kid were working or going to VBS, and then as a teenager were working at VBS. And it's just a great, great time. I mean, I love it. The girls raised more money than the boys, and so I got a pie in the face. And last year, the boys raised more money than the girls, and so I got the pie Holly in the face. And so I'll miss doing that again, because I'm sure the boys would have won again this year. But nonetheless, it just seems like the best thing to do. So let's recap really quickly. Number one, check out the midweek videos. Number two, don't forget to pray for Pastor Jacob and Miss Alyssa, as they're going to get married on May 9th. Number three, check out our church app, YouTube, and stay connected on all of our social media platforms. Number four, we'll be doing virtual worship till May 17th. And then number five, we are looking at doing something in the fall for our kids in lieu of VBS this year. All right. Well, with no further ado, let's jump right into our memory verse today as we get started on our next topic or talk in the book of Ruth. All right, so let's read. So remember, it's Luke chapter 24, verses 5b through 6a. Why do you look for the living among the dead? He is not here. He has risen. Obviously, next week we'll be looking at a new memory verse, and so I hope you've put this one to memory, put in a place of prominence in your house so you can memorize it, and again, we'll have a new memory verse next week. All right, so let's jump right into the book of Ruth. So last week, really quickly, I don't want to spend a lot of time recapping, but last week, really quick, we looked at the beginning of the story of Ruth and saw that it was a story of tragedy at the very beginning. Naomi and her family moved to Moab because there was a great famine in the land of Israel. And while there, her husband and two sons both died. Now, her sons had opportunities to marry. And so one married Ruth and one married Orpah. Naomi gave both of them the opportunity to go back and live with their parents. And Orpah took that opportunity. But Ruth didn't, and Ruth decided to stay with Naomi. And through that circumstance and through that conversation that was going on, we saw two truths about Ruth, one about Ruth and one about Naomi. Excuse me. And the one about Ruth was that she was loyal, that she was supremely loyal to Naomi. And what we saw about Naomi is Naomi was a person of character because of how she handled the situation and because Ruth wanted to be with her. There must have been something inside of her, and so she was a person of character, even in the midst of great tragedy. And so today we want to go forward into the story and look at chapter 2 and a little bit into chapter 3, because really 2 and 3 are the heart of the book, and they kind of set the stage for what's going to happen. Chapters 1 and 4 are kind of like the bookends, as we talked about in our midweek video, and chapter 2 and 3 really hold the key or the heart of the book. And where we left off last week, we saw that there was a glimmer of hope for Ruth and Naomi. The very last verse of chapter 1, verse 122, says that when they arrived back in Bethlehem, I'm going to paraphrase this, where they arrived back in Bethlehem, and it was the beginning of the barley harvest. Now remember, they didn't have a lot. because they had to leave, you know, they left Moab, had to travel back. And so they're in desperate need of food, but they're arriving at the perfect time because of the beginning of the barley harvest. Barley in ancient Israel was the first cereal grain to be harvested. And it actually would have been harvested around this time of year in late April or early May. And since it was the first one, that means they would have arrived at the beginning of the consecutive harvest seasons, which was good for them because without a provider, without a necessary means of income, they would have needed to rely on the grace of other people. And they were hitting it at a good time because people had things. They were harvesting their crops for the year, and they would be doing so through consecutive weeks and months. And so they landed in Israel at a great time. And chapter 2 opens up with Ruth and Naomi having this conversation of quite frankly, hey, we need to go. We need some food. And so Ruth decides to go glean in some fields. Now, gleaning is in this context, it may be used differently in other contexts, but in this story, in this context, it means that poor or immigrant people in the land of Israel were allowed to go pick up the extras that the traditional harvesters missed in the fields. There's actually, God actually sets this out in a law in Leviticus chapter 19, verses 9 and 10. You can go read that. But basically, if you own the field, God said, hey, why don't you leave the edges of the field uncut, unharvested, and then whatever you miss, so like if you're chopping grain or cutting barley, I think that's the correct farmer's term for when you cut, you harvest cereal grain, it's cutting, because you cut the stalk, and if you missed one, and if you dropped on the ground or you had some, you left it there, and you gathered up what you had, and then you would put those gathered pieces or stalks of grain with the head, the grain head still on it, and into what was called sheaves, and then eventually you would take all those sheaves, and then you would stack them in a big stack called a shock, and they would be stacked up and around like this, and it would allow them to dry out. So whatever was left on the ground and the edges of the field, you weren't supposed to get, and that was for the poor or the immigrant people. Well, Ruth and Naomi are in that category. So Ruth is going out to the field to pick up the extras, what's left on the ground or what's on the edges of the field. The Bible tells us, as it happened, she goes into the field of a guy by the name of Boaz, by the name of Boaz. Now, Boaz is a huge character in this story. We haven't met him until just now, but he's going to take a place of prominence in the next three chapters, or two, three, and four. And really, in chapter two, he's the main figure that we want to look at today because he is in the place of prominence in this chapter. And so what I want to do for the rest of our time is I want to talk about Boaz and how who he is and what we can learn from him today. So we meet Boaz at the very beginning of the chapter, actually chapter 2, verse 1, and the author of Ruth kind of foreshadows that this is going to be somebody you want to take note of. In fact, he says a couple of things that we need to know about Boaz. The first thing that he says is he's Elimelech, so that's Naomi's husband. He's Elimelech's relative. In fact, he's of the same clan. Now, that's going to be important for next week, so we need to remember that. But he's related to Elimelech, and that's a good thing. But secondly, the author tells us that he is a man of worth. Now, my translation says he's a worthy man. Your translation may say that he's a person of noble character or even a man of great wealth. Now, what the translators are trying to do is get across this very interesting and complex word or phrase in the Hebrew. And really and truthfully, there are two sides to the word. So it's like a coin that has two sides. And so what they're trying to convey about Boaz are two things. So here's number one. Number one, he's a man of substance. So he's a man of substance or wealth. Now we see that very clearly in the passage we're going to read here in just a minute, because we'll note that Boaz has a field. right? Owning land was very important in that day, and you had to have money to own land. So he had land. He also had a servant who was over the harvesters. So he had like a foreman, and then he had workers, and then there were also young women there who were taking care of other things associated with the work in the field. And so he has this whole group of workers that he's paying to go harvest all of his land. And in fact, it tells us that he comes from Bethlehem when he sees Ruth the first time. So the picture is he's living in Bethlehem, but he's coming out to the farm to oversee or to see what's going on with the harvesting operation since the beginning of the barley harvest. And so we see he has land, he has servants, he has workers, he has all these people working for him. And I want you to think about this too, because I thought this was quite interesting. It's interesting that the author would describe him as a man of wealth or a man of substance, in light of the fact that the reason Naomi and her family went to Moab in the beginning was because there was a severe famine. And that famine could have lasted nearly 10 years. So I don't know about you, but we lived in a farming community when Holly and I first got married. And those were some of the hardest working guys and ladies I ever met. But I would dare say, as great as all of them were, if they had had a 10-year famine and drought, I'm not sure all of the ones that we knew would have made it. I mean, or they would have been on the edge of existence nonetheless. But the text tells us today that Boaz, after a 10-year famine, was still a man of wealth and a man of substance. That's interesting. To me, that tells us he's good at what he does. He's good. He's a good businessman, and he knows what he's doing, right? And so we see that, and we'll see that more in as we go on through the story. But more than that, there's another side to this idea of a worthy man or noble character or a man of substance. There's another side. So not only does it mean he has great wealth, but it also means he has great character. In fact, the strict definition of the word is that he is noble with respect to character. And it is that aspect of Boaz that the author highlights the most in the next set of verses, or in the set of verses where Ruth and Boaz have this great conversation. And that's what I want to read for us this morning. All right, so read it with me. This is verse 8, chapter 2, verses 8 and following. Then Boaz said to Ruth, "Now listen, my daughter, do not go glean in another field." So don't go to anybody else's field and pick up barley or wheat or whatever. Or leave this one. "But keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping, and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you are thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn." Then she fell on her face, that's Ruth, bowing to the ground, and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes, that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?" But Boaz answered to her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given to you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Then she said, "I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants." Now, verse 14, this is the second setting. "And at mealtime, Boaz said to her, 'Come here and eat some bread and dip your morsel in the wine.' So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed to her roasted grain, and she ate until she was satisfied, and she had some left over. When she rose to glean," so that's when Ruth rose to go glean some more, "Boaz instructed his young men who were still sitting around where they were eating, the table or the circle, so to speak, 'Let her glean even among the sheaves.'" That's the grain they've already bundled up. "And do not reproach her, and also pull out some from the bundles for her and leave it for her to glean, and do not rebuke her. So she gleaned in the field until evening. Then she beat out what she had gleaned, and it was about an ephah, that's a quantity of barley. All right. So what the author does there is he highlights this word that he uses to describe Boaz, and he chooses to highlight not necessarily his wealth, but his internal character, right? So you have the word means he has outward facing tangible things, but then he has intangible internal components to his life as well. And it's that part that he chooses to highlight the most. And so what I want to do is I want to look at a few things that I think the author highlights that describe what it means to be a worthy man or a man of noble character. All right, so here's number one. The first thing that Boaz does is he protects Ruth. So what does it mean to be a man of worthy character? Well, protecting is obviously one of those aspects, because that's exactly what Boaz does to Ruth, or does for Ruth. Now, whether we want to admit it or not, Ruth was really vulnerable at this stage. I know in our culture today, that's not something we want to talk about or think about, but the reality is Ruth and Naomi were in a very vulnerable state. Think about all that they had gone through. They lost a husband, a son, I mean, a father-in-law, and all of this. And so they were probably very vulnerable emotionally, physically. They were hungry, personally, just interpersonally, everything going on, spiritually maybe. And Holly and I were trying to come up with a good way to describe this last one, so I'm not even sure this is a word, but it sounds good. They were vulnerable nutritionally, meaning they didn't have any food, right? And so Ruth is very vulnerable. But what does Boaz do? He doesn't use her vulnerability to his advantage, quite the opposite. He uses what he has to make sure she's less vulnerable. He protects her, right? He says, don't go to any other field. You stay right here. Wherever we're working, that's where I want you to be at. Why? Because he can provide for her in a safe environment. Did you hear what he told the young men when she left? I've told all of those dudes, don't touch you, don't mess with you. Not everybody would have said that. Not everybody would have said that. See, Boaz goes above and beyond the call of duty, so to speak, to make sure Ruth is protected and in a safe environment so that she can flourish. That's part of what it means to be a worthy man or a man of noble character. But secondly, he met the needs of Ruth. Ruth's most immediate need was food. So what did he do? One, he allowed her to glean in his field. Two, he brought her in to eat dinner with all of his workers. And in fact, gave her as much as she wanted. Right? Then allowed her to go back and glean more. And then said, hey, it's going to get hot out here. You're going to get thirsty. My guys have already poured some water up. You just go get some of that too. He provided for every one of her needs, food, or two most basic needs, excuse me, food and water, and allowed her the space to gather what she needed to provide for her and Naomi. But more than that, did you hear what he told his guys? He said, don't just not touch her, but look, guys, if she goes, I know y'all work, this is my paraphrase here, I know y'all worked hard getting those sheaves together. But you know what? If she goes and picks one up, don't tell her no. Let her do it. And in fact, more than that, why don't you go over there and why don't you pull some extra grain out and why don't you sprinkle it on the ground so that she can have that as well? And again, Boaz goes above and beyond the status quo, because the Lord's command in Leviticus 19:9-10, and again, you can read that, he doesn't have to do that. It just says, leave the edges of the field and let people come in and glean after the harvesters. But he goes above and beyond the status quo. He says, if she wants some of the sheaves, you let her have those. And in fact, why don't you go out there and pull some more out and put it on the ground for her to glean? And so again, he goes above and beyond the call of duty to make sure not only is she protected, but she has her most basic needs met. And number three, and I love this one, he acknowledges her virtue. So in the middle of that story, I hope you caught it. In this first setting, where they're first having this interaction with one another, Boaz tells her all this stuff. Don't go anywhere else. You stay here. If you want water, it's right there. I told my people, don't mess with you. You'll be safe here. And Ruth is in astonishment. She says, wow, why have I found such favor with you? And did you hear what Boaz said to her? Let's read it again. But Boaz answered, all that you have done for your mother-in-law, this is verse 11, since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, how you left your father and your mother and your native land and came to a people you did not know before. What does that tell me? And that tells me that Boaz was a listener, he was compassionate, and he was never afraid to give someone a compliment who deserved it. He acknowledged Ruth's virtue. He said, hey, I see what you've done. I've heard what you've done, and that's a very good thing. You're a virtuous person. He was quick to give a compliment to Ruth when she probably needed it the most. Right, because I'm sure life was very hard and difficult at this moment. And he just gave her an encouraging word. And then lastly, and we'll see this next week, Boaz is a man of his word. I won't give all the details away, because if you hadn't read chapter 3, where it gets really good, Boaz makes a promise to Ruth, and in fact, in chapter 4, he fulfills that promise. And so we see four things the author presents that kind of explain what it means to be a person of noble character or a worthy man. And number one, Boaz protects Ruth. Number two, he provides everything she needs. Number three, he's quick to give her acknowledgement or a compliment for her virtuous deeds. And number four, he's a man of his word. Right? And in all of those areas, he goes above and beyond what is required of him. And so that's who Boaz is. And we'll see these qualities played out over and over again through chapters 3 and in chapter 4 as well. So the question we have to answer for us today is, because obviously when we read the Bible, we don't want to just read it and gain knowledge and insight, but we want to apply it to our lives. And so the question that we've got to ask ourselves this morning is, okay, so how do we apply this to our life? So we've talked about Boaz, we've seen who he is and the characteristics that he has, and all those are awesome and amazing. So how does that apply to me? Well, while this obviously can apply to anyone and everyone, and we can all glean something from the life of Boaz, the reality is that today's application should be most squarely directed at us men. And so, ladies, feel free to grab a pen if you haven't already and a piece of paper and jot what I'm going to say down next. And feel free to bring it back up in the days ahead. No, but seriously, you know, feel free. Anyway, I think we apply this idea of the character, what it means to be a worthy man, in three ways to our own life. So I'm just kind of drawing out who Boaz was and what that would look like in modern culture. So number one, I think that Boaz challenges us to be a worthy husband. So for those of us who are husbands, that's a huge calling in our life. It's interesting to me that God really only establishes two institutions throughout time and space. The first was marriage or the family, and the second was the church. And as we sit today in 2020, the family, especially the role of husbands and wives, is under great stress, and it's a very trying time. Let's just say it that way. And Boaz presents a picture of what it means to look like a worthy man inside of a marriage relationship. And if we're all honest, all of us need some work. All of us need to be more attentive to the needs of our spouse, to our wife, to make sure we're protecting her in a way that fits where she's at in life, acknowledging when she does something well, praising her, complimenting her, making sure all of her needs are met, and just everything that she needs to succeed the most in life. And I think Boaz challenges us to be a better husband. I know for in my own life there are many, many times I can get in my own, you know, I can put the blinders on my eyes and I can get tunnel vision on a project or on a, you know, a side hustle or whatever we're doing in life. And, you know, sometimes it's easy to float back into those bachelor days when all you had to do was worry about you. And all you had to do was worry about how you spent your money because it was your money. And how you spent your time because it was your time and you weren't in a relationship. But if you're a husband, those days are different. And so some of us need to really up our game and we need to go above and beyond the status quo. We're not doing anything bad necessarily, but we're kind of the status quo. But Boaz challenges us to be better than that by the way he protects, by the way he provides for needs, the way he acknowledges, and the way he keeps his word. And so those are things we need to do inside of our relationship with our wives. And so if you're not doing it, let me challenge you to be more like Boaz, to be more protective in a sense. I don't mean like, you know, bowing up your chest and all that, but just making sure your family has everything they need and your wife has everything she needs to succeed in life and whatever area she chooses to for her vocation. And so just make sure that she has all of that. And so Boaz challenges us to be a better husband. Secondly, I think Boaz challenges us to be a better father. Now, obviously, Boaz doesn't have any kids at this point, and neither does Ruth. But I think the way that Boaz interacts with Ruth is a great teacher for how we should interact with our kids, especially on one main point. I can't tell you how many times in the course of my life, and it's tragedy, absolute tragedy, how many times I've heard, especially older men, mention that their fathers never told them they were proud of them, that they loved them, or something like that. And my heart breaks every time I hear one of those stories. One of the greatest joys and challenges of my life is obviously raising my two boys, Tucker and Tanner. I love them dearly. Some days I want to, but I love them. But one of the things I've committed to do, and I hope you will as well, because my father did this with me. He was, you know, obviously wanted the best for me, but also was always willing to tell me that he loved me. And so I've made it one of my challenges, one of my goals in life, is to always be continually telling my boys that I love them, that I'm proud of them, and that I'm supportive of them. Because far be it from me if I don't acknowledge them as people made in the image of God, as my sons, but more than that, when I don't acknowledge when they do something good, right? So dads, I don't know where you're at, but let me encourage you, there's nothing greater you can do for your sons or your daughters than to tell them that you love them, that you're proud of them, and acknowledge when they do something good. When they clean their room up good, and they don't have to be told, tell them. When they pick up after themselves, when they help do work, when they do chores, when you don't have to get on them, tell them. Because what you reward gets repeated. I'll say that again. What you reward gets repeated. And so I've made it one of my goals in life to make sure that my boys know that I love them, that I'm proud of them, and to acknowledge whenever they do something good. Because oftentimes we have the habit of just acknowledging when they do something bad. So we need to change that narrative, right? What you reward gets repeated. And lastly, I think Boaz challenges us to be a better citizen, right? So to be a better husband, to be a better father, and to be a better citizen. Boaz knew of Ruth in name only until they met that day. But at the moment that they met, he was willing to go above and beyond the call of duty to allow her to have her most basic needs met in life. And so I know we can't help everyone, and I know we can't do everything for everybody. I get that. But I would challenge all of us, myself included, that when we find a need in our area of influence, we need to be a good citizen, or maybe this is even a better word. Maybe this is even a more biblical word, a better neighbor. You remember the story that Jesus tells, the parable of the Good Samaritan, how the Israelite is on the road and he's about half dead, and then the Samaritan comes by and does whatever he can to help him back to good health, even putting him in the inn and giving him money and saying, hey, when I come back, if you need more, I'll give it to you. And then Jesus asked the person who asked the whole question to begin with, who do you think the neighbor is? And the guy responds, the one who showed him mercy. And so the whole point is a neighbor is anyone who needs help. So Boaz, again, challenges us to be a better neighbor, to be on the lookout, to be perceptive of needs that we can meet in our community in a positive way. Now, we can't help everybody, but I remember a story I heard about a preacher years ago, and someone helped him in ministry, and the guy told him, or the preacher who was helped, asked the guy, like, why are you doing this for me? What is all this? And he said, always remember, do for one, I'm trying to remember the quote exactly, do for one what you wish you could do for all. And look, we may not be able to help everybody. Financially, that might not be feasible. Realistically, that might not be feasible. But there's somebody in our area of influence who's in need, who needs help, and God's placed us in their circle so that we can be that person. And so I think Boaz challenges us on those three levels to be a better husband, to be a better father, and to be a better neighbor. And so I don't know where you're at this morning, and I don't know which one of these touches your life and touches you, whether it's, you know, men, whether you need to be a better husband, a father, or a neighbor. But I can assure you that one of those is where we need to work on the most. And so that's your challenge for the week, is to simply, one, ask the question, what do I need to work on? Do I need to work on being a better husband, a better father, or a better neighbor? Maybe it's all three. And if that's okay, that's fine. Like, don't get all in a tizzy. It's okay. But the second part of your challenge this week is, then you need to work on it, right? If you have to make a list, make a list. If you have to write it down, write it down. If you have to write it on your mirror, go get some dry, well, you may not want to go get them. You may can order them, you know, on our app. Get some dry erase markers. Write it on your mirror. Do whatever it takes to be a better husband, to be a better father, to be a better neighbor. Because that's what we're called to do, is to impact our area of influence, right? We said at the end of every video, right? We'll say it again today, because that's what we're called to do. We're called to move ourselves and others for Christ and impact our area of influence. And one of the best ways we can do that is by learning from Boaz's example and being better fathers, husbands, and neighbors, right? So I hope you'll do that today. Ladies, I know you're probably amening and raising your hand and nudging and giving elbows, but hold on, because we're going to focus on Ruth next week. So all the I can hear the applause of all the men already. No, but we're going to focus on Ruth next week, because she kind of takes a more central role in chapter 3, and we're going to look at her, who she is, and what we can learn from Ruth as well. All right, so that'll conclude our video today. Thank you so much for sticking around. Again, I know I said it every week, but I really, really, really appreciate you hanging around to watch each and every one of these videos and being so active on social media during this time of virtual worship. Don't forget, we'll continue to do this through May 17th or up till May 17th, and we'll make some announcement about after that on that Sunday. So it was great to be with you again. I hope you enjoy your Sunday. Hope you have a great day. May the Lord bless you and keep you. And as always, may we move ourselves and others toward Christ as we impact our area of influence this week. I hope you have a wonderful rest of your Sunday. Bye. Thanks for listening. For more information about Valley Grove, visit our Facebook page or website, valleygrovechurch.org.